You're listening to GDA Podcast, powered by GDA Speakers, now available on iTunes and all other podcast platforms, with new episodes every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. GDA Podcast showcases insightful conversations from the best thought leaders, educators, policy experts, motivators, and storytellers on the keynote speaking circuit today. Want today's guest at your next event? Call GDA Speakers at 214-420-1999 or visit gdaspeakers.com. And now, here's this episode of GDA Podcast with hosts Scale and Kyle Davis. Enjoy.
Okay, so back with us is Jason Barger. We're going to do a little bonus for all of our iTunes subscribers.
Bonus time.
Bonus round. Yeah. So, you know, as we were just mentioning prior to recording this little segment, we were talking about the difference between busyness versus effectiveness, and you had some thoughts on that.
Well, yeah. Gail was saying that, really what resonated with her is this idea that everybody is wearing around this badge of honor with this term busyness. And what I think is funny is if you listen to the way that we talk to each other, so you go into the Starbucks down the street or you walk into the office or certainly within every team and organization that I walk in, if I haven't seen somebody in a while and, you know, I say to Gail, "Hey, Gail, how you doing?" Chances are her first response back is, "Oh, great. I'm so busy. I'm so busy. You know, how are you, Jason?" And I say, "Oh, I'm busy." And we look at each other and we say, "Oh, you're busy. I'm busy. Okay. See you later." Right. And we go on to the next and we just go down our path. And if you listen to the way that we're talking, that we're having this same conversation with everybody we run into, and it comes back to this kind of badge of honor that somehow we've come to honor this term busyness, that if I tell you I'm busy, that somehow that communicates I'm kind of a big deal, I got so much going on, I don't have time for this, whatever those things are. But we throw it around, and in teams and organizations, it's become an epidemic in some ways that we throw it around because we honor this busyness that somehow in our minds we've come to equate busyness to equating to effectiveness. And so we run around spinning all day long, and we bought into this myth of like this, you know, multitasking myth that the more things I do, the more effective I am. But yet the reality is we are better when we're actually step back and able to say what needs to get my eyes, my focus, my attention, my heart today. Mm-hmm. And what I'm reminded of is, you know, the group that I'm going to be speaking to tomorrow here in Dallas, that they've just been hit with all of these. Today, they're learning about all these disruptive technologies and all this stuff that's happening in this very fast-changing, moving world. And what I'm going to remind them of is a story of what happens when somebody is climbing Mount Everest. That, you know, if you've ever known anybody or heard a story of somebody climbing Mount Everest, that when you get to a particular elevation on Everest, you get to a point where you have to take four breaths before you do anything. Mm-hmm. Four breaths between you accomplish any task. And so it's literally you have to do four breaths and then tie your shoe. Four breaths, tie the other shoe. Four breaths, you know, put your shirt on. Four breaths. And so these people that are hiking on Everest, when they get to that elevation, they have to wake up hours ahead of whenever they're going to leave because it takes four breaths to do anything. And in a world that's moving so quickly and that is perpetuating this kind of busyness, we need to be reminded of being able to stop and slow down and step back and take those four breaths and then intentionally move forward. And in that intentional action, we'll actually be more effective.
So there's two things that I'm thinking of right off the top of my head. The first thing, and this is something that was programmed into me when I went into sales and became a sales manager, was that activities equals results.
Yeah.
But the activities that we always the KPIs, if you will, of mm-hmm. the day was, okay, you know, let's work your numbers backwards. If you're trying to get to this goal, sales goal, yeah. you know, how many
reverse engineer it.
And so then we say, yeah. okay, how many, did you make your daily phone call things? And, you know, there's some truth to that.
Yeah.
That's not what
yeah.
we're talking about when we're talking about being busy, is it?
Right. Well, I think sometimes we can buy into that, that mm-hmm. sometimes we can also buy into, and again, there's a generalization that I know that there's a volume game to most sales entities, you know, that the certain number of calls equals a certain number of sales. I get that. But oftentimes what we can live into, and I've worked with and know many of sales folks or sales teams that have lived into this busyness, that they become more focused on the actual cranking out of the calls or of the leads or the busyness of that generation than the effectiveness of each of those individual calls or those individual touch points. And if they could increase and actually be more present, more aware, more attentive, instead of just cranking that out to get to the next one, if they were actually able to make a more informed and transformational kind of connection with the person they're trying to sell, that their volume wouldn't have to be as high. Mm-hmm. And yet sometimes we chase this perpetual busyness.
Yeah. One of the things that was instituted at one of the companies that I worked with, was that we put a cap as to how many open accounts you could have depending on the stages that you're in. So once they get to a certain point, you can't add new because of the quality of your engagements. And so that's when we, while we still focused on those activity metrics, it changed because we really wanted the focus to be on, you know, are you actually prepared? Have you thought? Have you, you know, had a pre-meeting to the meeting? Like, are you really thinking about it? So it's bringing that intentionality back and then shifting the weight of
Right. And we all know this, right? Mm-hmm. This is not, you know, rocket science. Cognitively, mm-hmm. we know that. But there's a knowing and a doing gap. I know that if I just crank out 30 meetings in a day, that I'm not going to be as good in those 30 meetings as I would if there were seven, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
And yet we know that, but then there's a knowing and a doing gap. And so in my opinion, the places and the individuals that are doing this the best in a highly distracted world are the ones that are able to say, I tell a story about surfing and where we look is where we go. What has to get my eyes, my focus, my attention, my heart today? Mm-hmm. And then the best are relentless about this week, this month, this quarter. And I can't be all things to all people, but I have to be clear on what are the highest priorities that have to get my eyes, my focus, my attention, my heart, because where we look is where we go.
So the final thing that we're going to touch on then is how this is impacted by viewing the world through the lens of creativity or bringing creativity into it. So what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, well, I think one of the opportunities, and again, this highly distracted world and this busyness versus effectiveness, is the way we begin to get ourselves out of that is we have to be able to see the world and see our work with new eyes. And so we have to begin to see things differently, or else all we'll do is repeat the same patterns. And so, you know, a couple of the examples that I love is, you know, when I was growing up, the Heinz 57 ketchup bottle, you know, that glass 57 ketchup bottle was on every restaurant table anyone went into. And everybody had their own theory, if you remember this. Those old glass bottles. Everybody – it might even be too old for you. But
a tap on the 57.
Yeah. Right? So everybody had their own theory of how you get the ketchup out of the bottle. And it was either, you know, you just shake it like mad. You know, turn it upside down and you hit it on the very back. There was a group that thought, you know, the little 57 on the side of it was the secret sweet spot. And if you just tapped it right there, then the ketchup would flow out. Mm-hmm. Some people would turn it to the side and go knife in approach. Everybody had their theory of how you get the ketchup out of the bottle, because the reality was it was such a pain in the to get the ketchup, to get the product actually out to consume it, until finally somebody asked the question, I know this is the way we've always done it, but maybe we need to see it with new eyes. And finally somebody, and I like to think it was the intern in the room, you know. It was probably the person that really – everybody around was saying, you shouldn't raise your hand, right?
Right.
And said, hey, I think there's a better way to do this. What if we turned the ketchup bottle upside down and we reoriented the opening to actually be at the bottom, and then we'll just let gravity work. And so when you take the top off, it'll just flow right out, right? Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, you know, why did it take 70 years or whatever till somebody asked that question? But I keep that image in my office. I actually have a little Heinz 57 glass bottle in my office to remind myself that there are questions like that dying to be asked right now in every one of our personal modes of operation, but also within our teams and organizations. I know this is the way we've always done it. And I know that we're doing things because we're keeping ourselves busy, but maybe there's actually a more effective way to do it. And what would that look like to turn the ketchup bottle upside down?
Do you think that sometimes companies, not only do they say this is how we've always done it, but then they also look at their competitors and say this is how, you know, we do it as an industry, and then they get kind of stuck in that as well?
Yeah, absolutely. Because I think we see what we know. Mm-hmm. And so oftentimes we look around and we do the comparison game and we look at other groups in our industry, and hopefully we're learning from them at the same time. But oftentimes we can become just mirror images of one another. And so it becomes even harder then to see beyond that, because if they're not thinking of it, how could we possibly think of it? And again, in a fast moving world, the easiest thing to do is to put your head down and do what you did yesterday. And yet the innovators, in my opinion, the 21st century leaders right now that are truly being creative and innovative are not always in these huge ways, but are in small ways stepping back to ask the question of what if we did it slightly differently? Mm-hmm. What if we did what we do just a little bit differently? Because what it truly means to innovate, I know everybody thinks of innovate in this Steve Jobs kind of like,
yeah, black turtleneck and dad jeans.
Yeah, dad jeans, and all of a sudden you're going to come up with the one idea that's going to revolutionize the industry, and you might, but chances are, when I talk about innovate, what it really means is to find a better way to do something. Mm-hmm. Very simply, just find a better way to do it, and there are opportunities in every one of our personal operations and our teams and organizations every single day to find a better way to do it.
Just to put an end cap on that, what can, just from a cursory glance, what can an organization or a company or an individual do to help better foster that creativity that you speak of?
Yeah, absolutely.
Or innovation.
Yeah. Well, one, they have to talk about it. They got to be willing to give permission for people to try to fail, to come up with ideas, to come up with a, hey, I to even have an idea and a permission that we could begin to think that way. Oftentimes, creativity gets stymied before it even gets started, because somebody comes up with an idea and everybody in the room shoots them down or says, no, we got to get onto the next agenda item. So the teams that are doing it the best that I've watched are the ones that are carving out specific time to really engage in those, what I call, conversations that are the currency for change. Time and space to do that kind of what if thinking. And then also, not only a team perspective, but from an individual perspective, I know for my own personal life, I need to make sure that I'm carving out personal time that's my own what if space, where I'm not, taskmaster just to a to-do list, but I am dreaming a bigger picture and I'm having space where I can begin to think of what if I did this slightly differently.
Mm-hmm. You know, I was trying to Google something to try to find what the phrase is. I'm going to say it's called a permission construct or a permission system or something. But when you start talking about something in order to give the people on the other end that permission to say or do something. And, you know, it's used a lot in political campaigns to say,
right,
hey, it's okay to vote for this person if you don't agree with them or vice versa. But the same can be applied into a business as well.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Cool. Well, thanks again for doing this little bonus for us. We went a little over time, but all magic. I like it all. So, thanks again. And for those that are listening to this on iTunes, please be sure to subscribe, rate, and then also leave a comment, because it helps us. Thanks again.
Thanks for listening to this episode of GDA Podcast, powered by GDA Speakers. If you're interested in booking today's guest, visit GDA Speakers at gdaspeakers.com or call 214-420-1999. Visit gdapodcast.com and subscribe to our newsletter to stay up to date and be informed of new episodes, blog posts, and more. Be sure to follow GDA Podcast on Twitter and Instagram at GDA Podcast, as well as Facebook at facebook.com/GDA Podcast. Thanks again, and stay tuned for more from GDA Podcast and GDA Speakers.